Welcome to the WFO Life Podcast. Buckle up for interviews, insights, and practical discussions, and the occasional intellectual oddity, all designed to help you master self, master craft, and accomplish any life mission. And we are live. This is Dr. William Curtis, and I'm with my co-host, Lieutenant Colonel Chris Story, and we have a special interview for you today. This is a repeat guest, good friend, coaching colleague of mine, Sebastian Giraldo. As you know, if you've listened to this show before, Sebastian has a PhD in elite athlete development. He's a professional soccer coach and trainer, and he's a coach on the U.S. soccer program. He's got a lot of background that I think are really important for athletes that are trying to get through this whole COVID-19 situation. It's really complex, and I thought we would talk a lot today about what an athlete needs to be doing during this kind of quarantine situation. Sebastian, welcome back to the show. What have you been up to?
Thank you guys first for having me on. I've been in quarantine like most people, I would say, but getting a lot of things done through Zoom meetings. I'm actually entering a new job as the director of coaching and methodology at San Antonio City Soccer Club, which is a very, very good club and headed towards very, very good things here. So I've started work with them. I'm excited to be on. I think it's interesting times for all of us. It's definitely affected the soccer environment. I, for the first time in many, many years, have not been on the field for hours on end and at night. So it's been a change of pace for me, but it's allowed me to target and do different things. Some of them personally, some of them professionally, but I think it's actually been healthy for myself.
Yeah, I think what you hit on, Sebastian, is, you know, kind of the right attitude that Dr. Curtis and I have been trying to do with some of our podcasts during these interesting times. Just say, hey, you know, you can sulk that you're not doing the things you would normally be doing, or you can, you know, develop yourself in other areas that may, you know, get neglected when we're in our normal rat race. So, you know, thanks for sharing that.
Hey, before we get too deep into the topic, tell me more about this coaching position you're taking on. It's really this is pretty a big step. I mean, it's a big club. It's a situation where you're going to be able to use a lot more of your skill set. You're going to be able to put your fingerprint structure to what's going on. Tell me some more about that.
Yeah, so I would say it's exciting for me personally because obviously going from Corpus Christi, which is a smaller market, to San Antonio, which is the seventh biggest city in the United States, it's a big jump overall in environment. Right away, I felt the intensity, the speed, the pace of how things need to get done, which is exactly what I was craving. The coaching staff is very high level. The player pool is high level. So in many regards, it's what I wanted to find for myself in a daily environment, get pushed a little bit more. And that way, I think I can be more creative and come up with things that impact greater player pools and coaches overall. San Antonio City SC is in a very interesting position right now, which is has been a top club in the area for a long time, transitioned from another major club, but is really trying to push the boundaries of what we're doing in terms of player development. So I think a big reason for me being there is applying a little bit of my expertise in the player development pathway, what we do in the individual environment of players, also on the coaching education side. But it's a club that's growing. It has really, really big ambitions, which match up with my personal ambitions. It's a big reason I'm here. And really my 2 weeks that I've been on virtually with the staff and players and families, I've absolutely loved it. The intensity, the drive of people, it's just another level, and it's what I was looking for. So I'm excited to apply new things and learn from new people, and just the overall daily environment, I would say, is a big change from where I was.
Now, our topic today, you know, we wanted to talk about what is a high-level athlete or somebody that's really trying to, you know, make the most of this current situation where everybody is quarantined, seasons are canceled. We got, you know, I feel bad for, you know, Chris and I mentioned on one of our previous shows that, you know, even my daughter, you know, she played on a high school team locally. She had a club team that she was playing in. All their seasons are canceled. They were top of their bracket. They actually would have went on to the playoffs and all these kind of things. All that's gone. It's over, and I guess, you know, nothing will become of the, you know, this is just the season that never was kind of thing. My question is, I mean, you're right in the thick of it with this new club. You guys are kind of trying to keep high-level athletes engaged, first off, in their sport. Now, I know this topic also, we're going to use soccer probably as the backdrop because that's our common language that we have worked together with for years. But a lot of this, even like, you know, with Chris, his daughter's a wrestler and stuff, I'm sure that a lot of skill sports, this what we're going to talk about today would probably cross over a lot with those.
Yeah, I'm going to try to be as general as I can with some of the stuff because it applies. Soccer is very similar to other open decision-making sports, basketball being very similar, hockey, even though they require different skill sets, the way you develop and train players is very similar. Sports like wrestling might be a little different, but there is some transferring of skill acquisition talk that we're going to go into. I think in the end, it's a little bit what Chris said. I think we have to be present in what's happening. We don't have control of a lot of the governing bodies, the decisions, especially what our governments are doing. So we need to make sure we're doing the best that we can with our families, with our athletes. When we talk about youth level athletes, I get a little scared when we talk just about elite athletes, because the pathway for example, a player that ends up playing professional and a player that ends up just playing maybe recreational the rest of their adult life can match up very similarly at younger levels. So I would say as a club at San Antonio City, we're focused on providing the best sporting experiences we can for our athletes, our parents, our families, anyone involved. Part of that is the development of elite athletes, but it's not the whole picture because you don't know what the long term is going to hold for a lot of the athletes. So in these times, trying to provide the best experiences we can still, with the restrictions that we have.
Yeah, I was going to say, might be kind of my nature and what I do for a living, but I've been telling my kids that, you know, this is almost the time to go native, go internal in a good way and say, hey, we're not sure when we're going to get back to school or to our sports, but, you know, when you go back to civilization as normal, you know, hopefully we'll all go back as a physically and mentally stronger version of ourselves because we don't have, you know, some of the normal distractions to deal with. It's like there, you know, there's no shortage of time to work out. There's no shortage of time to read and, you know, work on ourselves. And so even though my kids are 8, 10, and 12, you know, I'm using this as a time to say, hey, these are unprecedented times, but, you know, that doesn't mean you can't come out of it a better individual. And so I'm assuming that, you know, what you're saying that's applying to soccer is probably something, you know, like everybody should be doing at this time, you know, kind of invest in yourself, put some money in the bank, so to speak.
And for me personally too, as coach has, and as the director of coaching has allowed me to attack areas of my personal development and personal, professional and personal development that I usually don't have time because of the rhythm of seasons and training. So I've been excited. I think I've been more creative in these times, maybe put more things on paper than I have been able to do in the past, and connect with my family, which lives away from me, which is very important, but I feel re-energized in many ways. So when we get back on the field, I think you're going to see that from a lot of people, players, parents, everything. We're going to value and be a little bit more energized in the daily activities that we do.
Preparedness matters, and the timing, let's call it the periodization for that, is interesting to me. So what is it you're looking to? I mean, we're all guessing when sport will resume, so to speak, but what are you telling your younger athletes right now in preparation? Kind of give me a walkthrough of the things that you're really focused on when the future of when games will begin or when formal training as groups will begin. What are we doing leading up to that?
Yeah, I think it's a good question and probably one we get from parents a lot right now. It's complicated because we have no set end of when we can get on the field or when things resume. My message to my players and working with the staff is, we have to be present in what's happening right now. So we have to right now it forced us to connect with our players and our parents in much different ways. Zoom calls, however it is, it's development of different skills that maybe we weren't attacking with being able to be on the field. So I think there's advantage in doing different things and interacting with people in different ways. My main message to my players and parents is, and staff has been similar across the board, which is we need to be present in the moment, which I think aligns a lot with the philosophy of stoicism that you guys talk on here a lot about. But it's present in the moment and then preparing ourselves for when we can actually go out again. And as a club, it's been beneficial. Personally, it's been beneficial. Players, I think right now, should be focusing on themselves, their families, their own development. For some people, that can mean a lot of training. For other people, it can mean little training. I do think people shouldn't be so concerned about, I need to make sure I'm working every single second of the day. I think people, if we're doing this right, and I'm a true believer that development is individual, about individual people, about human development individually. So the programming and what each individual person is doing varies across the board. Does that mean you shouldn't be touching a soccer ball daily or doing things? You should be doing some things, but I don't think they should feel the pressure that they feel in terms of a club putting out all this information with skills, with activities. Every person's issues are different and they don't know themselves very well. So I would say people to attack their personal development with the way they see fit, where they can gain the most benefit. For me, a lot of it has been personal connection with my family, with the people that I love. So I think that part is very important as well.
You know, let's unpack that a little bit more, because my mind was running a different area of different, you know, running all over the place when you were just saying that, because, you know, I get to thinking about so many players I know, and both, you know, youth level, professional level players, their priorities are all probably different. You know, I remember players that we coached recently that had serious injury problems. And of all things, you know, people might look at their career and say, this player was doing really well at this level, had a bad injury, how unfortunate. But now there's this gap. There's this enforced gap that everyone has to, you know, and those players might spend a lot of time getting their health right. They might be able to, you know, some of these, especially the youth level, I mean, you know, some of these tournaments and the leagues that they play in, there's so many games. And what ends up happening is their bodies are beat down and some of them are still growing. You know, we get these athletes in their peak height velocity where they're growing rapidly and they're playing, you know, three games on a weekend and training during the week and all this kind of stuff. This might actually be an interesting time where, if it's used right, some people might not need to train as much. They need to let their body heal. Like you have said with your personal time, I know I've done the same thing. I have set back, restructured my life quite a bit. I actually enjoy the margin that this whole situation has built for me. And I think that a lot of athletes might have completely individualized situations. And I didn't really think that's how you were going to come across on that, but that's kind of interesting the way you phrase that. And I see the wisdom in it. Some players need, it might be a time when they feel they can catch up. You know, they can maybe skill-wise, they could catch up in their given, you know, sport. But I'd like to, that's a great angle you've taken with that it could be individual. I think there still has to be some base work, if you know what I mean, but maybe it doesn't have so much urgency that I had in my mind that it would. You know, I was thinking maybe we should be doing more right now, you know, but maybe that's not really the case. Maybe it's best just to go with the flow to some extent and you learn other aspects of your sport besides just drill.
I can give you an example because I obviously communicate with my athletes, some that are playing professional soccer here in the United States, others that are playing high-level youth, or maybe they have parents that have younger players. Some of my, and I would say it's consistent with a lot of the high-level professional or college players, many of them are using this time to reset, either that be injury recovery, which the people that were injured are super excited that they're getting to recover injury-wise while no one is getting to play on the field. So that kind of worked out for them. Other players that psychologically were close to burnout or feeling a lot of burnout in different areas of their life, they're trying to reset. And then younger players, what you said, we know what high-level competitive soccer looks like for a lot of young players and families, travel, gone every weekend, training multiple times a week, there's been a ability to reset and maybe take a step back and work on things individually that you need to get better. There is certain things, and soccer is a good example. If you don't touch the soccer ball consistently, you're going to see your skills and your ability and comfort with the ball drop. So there's some things that I would say need to be happening. How they're happening is really a question of what you're trying to get in the outcome. I would say the scariest thing that happens right now, and we see it with the news, same idea, the amount of information given out by clubs, by soccer organizations is overwhelming. How much that information actually benefits an individual is up for a debate, but there is a lot of research layers we can go into about the impact that a lot of the stuff we're seeing actually has on athletes. But same as my development philosophy, and what I've applied for many years is the idea that individual becomes the most important thing. So I'll go back. What people need individually varies. So what people should be doing during this time where we're away from the field and away from our teams is individual based, and it should be. And I think the more mature you get as a player, the more experienced, they're more aggressive in accepting what they do individually is up to them, and they can decide, and they're not as scared to do things. So, for example, resting. Like some players are just resting, and that's what they needed, and they don't feel pressure from all this content. While a younger player might feel pressure to do all these things, I think really with parents and family and with people you trust and individually, you need to reflect on what you need and then attack it with whatever will get the best outcome for yourself.
Yeah, I think Sebastian, one of the things that I've struggled with as a leader during this unique time is how much or how little to engage with my people. And I think that applies to, business, sport, in the cases that you're talking about. But I mean, have you kind of developed I guess a hybrid solution on, hey, some people probably need more babysitting. Others, you could leave them alone for 6 months and they'll come out fine. I mean, I know for me, that's been, kind of a touch and go struggle.
I think it goes into what I would say, starting to go into research topics that we're probably going to touch a little bit here, the idea of expertise, and then as you go down, people that are more novice. I would say as you're closer to the novice end, players, individuals require a little bit more guidance. As you go higher up that pyramid to expertise, I think those players need less guidance and more, how are we willing to support them in what they think is best for them? But I think even at the novice levels, it's not about pushing people to do what you think maybe they need. It's understanding them as individuals, understanding their current situation. Some people are facing family members, that maybe have corona or recovered or maybe didn't recover. So it's a very, very individual basis. I try to feel out the people that I work with as much as I can. And the more you understand them, the more you know what you can do with them. I'm not of the attitude right now to push people towards something. I think it's up to people to decide. We can provide content and we can guide them, but it's up to them. If a player comes to me during this time, even a youth player, and says they're better served maybe resting, not doing all the activities, I would totally accept that and then maybe try to understand the layers of why they're feeling that way or why they think not training as much is what's beneficial to them. So it goes back to the individual development piece. We got to understand the people that we're working with. We got to understand their situations, how they're feeling, et cetera. And then maybe I help guide, but more than anything, then discover what they need.
Sebastian, my middle daughter, you know very well, her club that she's been playing with has been doing what I think they believe is best. They're pushing out 3 and 4 messages a day. They have nutrition topics. They have mindset experts that they're doing things with. They are doing sort of CrossFit style sort of workouts 3 times a week, and then there's skill sessions, these kind of ball drill sessions, either led live by a coach or in a Zoom type situation, or recorded and told what to do on their own.
What do you think? I mean, you mentioned there was kind of some science behind that. To me, I'm gonna, as a parent coach, I feel like it seems overwhelming. The emails that, I mean, I literally turned the notification off because there were too many. It was like, look, I can't keep up with whether this was Thursday's workout or Wednesday's workout. I can't tell which this was and which did my kid already do, you know. And then I also feel like I'm kind of chasing her around, you know, like, hey, did you check on that? And, you know, it's too much sometimes, I think. But that's my personal take. What does the research say about these types of programs?
Yeah, so I'll give you a good picture. So I think clubs do have a responsibility to put out content to parents and players. What that content is really dependent on what the philosophy of the club is and what they're trying to do in the long run. So I think there is some responsibility to provide that video content, maybe training sessions over Zoom or whatever it is. But it has to take us back to understanding of how people learn and how people develop skills. So I think those talks at times are a little bit, that content is disconnected from how people actually learn and develop skills. And I'll go into very soccer specific examples right now. And you knew this well working throughout the years with me, but in the end, when we're training soccer players, we're trying to make them better at the game. So when you see a lot of the content right now, it's individual skills, it's individual technique. Does it have value for the player? Yes, it does, because they're doing things with the ball, they're having repetition in certain ways. But then the big question is, how does that relate to the game? And the answer to that, and I think the research will support, is that it doesn't translate to the game very well, because the game is an open skill game. It's one that requires decisions to be made split second. So it goes into the idea of what we're actually trying to develop in our players. For me, above anything else, is game intelligence. To develop game intelligence, you need the components that exist in a game. What are they in soccer? They're opposition, they're pressure, they're the environment, they're the parents yelling on the sideline, they're the surface being different, there's the wind blowing, there's a lot of things. Specific skill work does not relate to game intelligence very well. So are the players making gains in some areas? The answer is yes, but is it a big impact on their overall development? I think the answer is no. And one caveat where you can have there is, again, the novice expertise pyramid. When a player is younger, there's more value in them doing ball mastery, ball comfort, etc., because they're just starting to learn those skills, so their progression is going to be quicker. A professional player, on the other end, or an elite older player, is going to have less benefit of doing those things, because really where they're getting measured is how good are they at the game. So I do think there's some disconnect between content and how people actually learn and improve at soccer or other open skill decision-making sports.
Right. So the reality is, maybe for some sports, certainly soccer, this would be my advice to others, and I'm sure you would echo this, maybe sometimes just watching soccer might be a time where you watch or study others in your sport to see how they move, or video, or just enjoyable, you know, replaying World Cup games, or like maybe with Chris's daughter, you know, she's a wrestler, maybe looking at famous wrestling matches and how those played out and how the strategy was. There's ways to study a sport without necessarily, like you said, you're not doing drills and drills and drills just for the sake of drills. You're looking at everything in context and looking at patterns of play, which I think is key.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that, I don't know, depending on how you see it, we're blessed or cursed now with how much, I know both of you talked about, you know, the inundation of information is sometimes overwhelming, but on a good side, there's so many incredible documentaries, sports and otherwise, or just movies that are maybe based on true stories, are available on Netflix, Amazon, that chronicle, you know, life or sports struggles. So I know I've tried to, you know, dust the positive streaming service availability instead of just like zone out on, you know, old Friends reruns or something, you know, try to show the kids and me, honestly, things that you have at your fingertips that are beneficial. There's so many resources. I can only imagine, I was talking to my kids about it, if this would have happened, you know, 50 years ago, there probably would be even more domestic violence and drug and alcohol abuse, because we have so many more outlets now that can be positive that we can tap into. And so I know I've tried to get creative on, you know, digging deep into the Netflix archives, because there's a lot of gold in there for athletes especially.
I think there's a lot of value in improving ourselves and being well-rounded right now. We're having the opportunity, like I said, like skill acquisition, how we get better at the game, improving game intelligence. Those things become difficult because we can't do the normal things that are required to really make those things better. So I think there's a lot of value in watching things outside of our discipline, maybe reading books, watching different stories of people. It acquires and develops different skills that maybe aren't related to actual performance in games or training. But I think there's a lot of value in that overall. My fear, and it's difficult, is it's not just because of the corona situation. It's not just because we're quarantined. A lot of the problems that we're talking about in terms of the content put out there is a consistent problem, especially in soccer, which is we have a lot of content that is disconnected from actually how people improve at the game, which is to improve at the game and to be really impactful in soccer, you got to be very game intelligent. And that's well beyond being good with the ball and being able to do skills. That's a much more complicated development for a person.
Absolutely. Kind of a different thread, but when you look at athletes that are, I know this is true for soccer, so I want to see if this applies in other areas, but cross-training, in other words, athletes that do multiple sports or multiple activities, often their primary sport they have more success in because they've done other things. So this might be the gymnast who becomes a runner, or, you know, maybe a person who plays basketball but also happens to play soccer. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So what do you think, as far as maybe this is also a time in, of course, it might not be, you know, we're not going to do this in large groups, but in small areas or ways that, you know, that people can do other things. Do you think there's value in any type of cross-training type activities?
I do think there's a lot of value. I think it goes a little bit to the cognitive piece about enjoyment as well. People enjoy doing different things, trying different things. So I think that's a part of it. There is a good amount of research that, you know, supports the idea of early diversification, which is people should do different sports and different activities to develop and be happier as an athlete as they develop. But there is also a good amount of research that shows that specialization early on leads to maybe more elite outcomes for players. So it's I would say it's a pull. There's different schools of thought. How you do it is the most important. So for example, like in Brazil, they play a ton of soccer, but it's a lot of unstructured soccer, and they don't do other sports necessarily while they're doing that, and they produce the most professional players out of any country in the world. Here in the United States, it's a different context. We have a lot of opportunity of different sports. And I think a lot of the confusion with people is the burnout. People say if you specialize early in a sport, there's burnout or there are injuries. Yeah, that's true. But if done correctly, you can minimize a lot of those negative outcomes. So it's a lot about the process overall.
But ironically, that's not what's happening in the U.S. We have over the last 20 years, a rapid acceleration in the early specialization in almost all sports.
Yeah, and it's again a disconnect a little bit, I think, of understanding how people learn and how they develop over the long run. There's a lot of things that can look really good. And I'll give you an example of like training a younger team. You can do a lot of things that maybe to the parent look very good. This team is executing short passing and we work on it all the time and they're amazing at doing it and they look really good in these training activities. But then does that relate to them developing over the long run as good soccer players? It doesn't. Really a very good environment. It should be a little bit chaotic, should be a little bit messy, should require people to engage in different situations and then be able to come up and recognize those patterns and those situations over the long run. It's actually a deep problem. And like I said, I think a lot of the problems that we're seeing right now exist even when we're not in these like special times.
Yeah. I was going to say, I've seen that in multiple sports that I've played firsthand and seen it with kids and, you know, my kids' friends is that, I mean, you can be a rock star when you're by yourself on the court or on the field, you know, making goals from midfield, making three pointers, but you interject some chaos in there and you put a kid in a competitive situation. Sometimes those skills go out the window. And I think that's where really like the mental aspect of it comes into play. Obviously honing those skills are important, but like you were saying, Sebastian, it's like, you gotta, you know, make it messy a little bit. You can't just like have a kid, okay, stand out there and kick 100 soccer balls into the left corner of the net and then, and not, you know, get in their face or have some defense or, you know, put a smaller target, you know, something to simulate the, conflict or friction that they're going to experience.
Yeah, when you talk about open decision-making sports, and obviously use soccer as the frame of reference, but you're trying to improve people's ability to recognize patterns, situations, and then almost automatically be able to solve those problems with their decision, which it's almost so fast, it's not even a decision-making process, but then do they have the tools to execute how to solve that problem? So a lot of what we see is we think these skills, being really skilled, will translate to being impactful in the game. It will only if the players can recognize the patterns and schemes and be able to solve them very, very quickly. And then that relates to like positive actions. But what we're seeing right now, and going back to what Dr. Curtis said, we see a lot of fitness, we see a lot of technique work, skills work. That falls into what we call a lot is training form, which is what we think training should look like. That can look really neat. That can look, man, this person is really, really good at doing this skill, and it looks really nice to the eyeball. We want players and athletes to experience more what we call playing form, which is they're in game situations that are complicated, they're messy, like Chris said, and then are they actually able to execute their skills in those situations? That's where we want our athletes to train more. But what do we see a lot of right now is training form, what looks really nice to the eyeball, but then the transferability to game intelligence is low.
Right. One of the things that was crossing my mind, of course, I've, you know, my medical background and coaching background, I'm always have an eye for injury prevention, always have an eye looking at what athletes can be doing to minimize the chance of, you know, injury or improve their conformations. In other words, some people, just the shape of their body, the different things that they started with can be modified with specific activities. One of the things that was on my list that I thought would be helpful during a time of COVID-19 lockdown would be maybe improving base fitness, but really starting to look at key things like mobility of joints, ACL strengthening. These are activities that can be done in almost game fashion, but they can be done on purpose in an off-season situation like this. Because, you know, look at what are the things it takes down. I know it takes down a lot of female athletes, especially soccer players or ACL injuries. You look at a lot of people that are real stiff in their low back. I see kids all the time that come into my clinic that can't – they're good athletes or super strong guys, football players, things like that. They can't touch their toes. And the problem is they have such poor mobility because of either hypertrophied, you know, big thick muscle, or just a lack of working outside of their primary strength training or whatever. And so I think that this time also could be something you could work on: balance, mobility, and if you have areas of extra tightness where you know, poor range of motion, things like that. This is a time that those kind of activities can be done, whether that's in a sort of Pilates format, whether that's in a yoga format, any of these types of things. I think those are other things too that I think people don't really think about. They can be relaxing. They some of these can also tie into a kind of a topic, you know, Sebastian, I've talked about a lot is mindset, you know, working on the mental aspect of, you know, why we do what we do, what's our purpose. You know, I talked a lot with our athletes about the idea of being, you know, prepared mentally for training, being prepared mentally for games. There's a lot that can go into that that can start with preparing the body, improving mobility, and then also kind of some of those activities, I know yoga is one of them, has sort of a mind-body component. So it's one of these things you can find more peace and more center individually, but also improve your mobility at the same time. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's just one of those things that might be one other little piece of the puzzle that people could think about during this window of time.
Yeah, and when you're thinking about what is going to, if I spend time on mobility, yoga, whatever it is, and how that's going to benefit me as a player once we come out of quarantine, I would say in terms of what I'm seeing, if you move better, if you become stronger, et cetera, that's probably going to have better gains for you as a soccer player than all the training form activities that we're seeing right now. So I think it's a great time to work on that stuff and understanding where you are on those different factors. And I was actually a part of a talk and discussion the other day from another doctor, and I think he framed it perfectly, but it's about habits that maybe we developed in quarantine that we can translate once we get back on the field. And it might be just nutrition, or it might be mobility, strength, but find one area where you want to improve. And while we're in quarantine and we're away from each other, try to improve on that every day. When you come out, then you're going to be a better athlete overall if you can improve just in that one area. For me, flexibility of soccer players is a big issue. And it goes back to the problems that we have when we're normally on the field. It's such a high-paced environment, training on the field, traveling, et cetera, that we don't pay attention to other areas. So I think what you brought up, mobility, strength, flexibility, including mental strength, are all things that probably can be improved on and have a bigger impact for yourself as an athlete once we get out than the skills training, than the technical stuff that we're seeing. Not that that doesn't have value, but when we're talking about how big of a transfer there's going to be from what you're doing right now in quarantine to going on the field, I think those areas will have a bigger transfer because you're going to be a better athlete.
Yeah, Roger, all that. And I won't get on my soapbox during this episode, but I will tell you that while we have the time, why don't we fix some nutritional habits? You know, I'm big on that area, and it's one of these things that a lot of folks, now they have the time to think and reflect on what they're doing and how they're fueling their body. I know I'll be doing a talk with you here pretty soon on the, talking to some youth athletes about nutrition. This is might be a time to kind of look at habits, maybe build some other habits, because if you're not fueling your body properly, and you just jump right back into the slipstream of regular training whenever this all, you know, kind of it concludes, and you haven't fixed some of those habits, there's a lot of high-level athletes, a lot of very promising youth athletes that do not have nutrition locked down. They have a misconception that because they're young, they get away with things. Oh, it's just about gaining weight, or, you know, I'm not worried about that. No, it's about performance. And I think that this is also another great time to kind of lock into those concepts.
I know me and you see this anecdotally all the time, but research supports this idea as well, which is elite athletes, and youth athletes in general, they're not fueled correctly for the demands of the training regimens that they actually have. And that leads to a lot of negative outcomes that we're talking about, injury, et cetera. But it's extremely common, I would say, the majority of youth athletes are not properly fueled for the actual demands of their training or game. So that's a big piece of it. And then me and you as well, anecdotally, know that even top level soccer players, their nutrition or their habits for sleep, et cetera, do not match up with the demands of what they're doing in the game, which is as the game goes higher level, the demands physically and mentally go up, but they're not fueled to be able to meet those demands. So what you see is injuries, burnout, whatever it is.
Absolutely. What advice do you have for parents in this scenario of youth athletes? Also, perhaps coaches. I mean, you are a coach of coaches, and you understand what the science says about coaching theory and athlete development. What should parents and coaches? I mean, I feel like you've kind of touched on this to some extent, but if you could talk to them directly, what kind of thoughts do you have there?
Yeah, I'll start with coaches because what we're doing at SA City right now, I think, is pertinent to this, which is we're taking the opportunity to be very aggressive with our coaching education and development within internally as a club, which is we are meeting multiple times a week. We're talking about what's going to happen and formalizing processes to make us a better club. So I think it's a good opportunity to not only get better, but to make sure that what exists and what you talk about it as a club is actually formalized and consistent throughout different age groups. So I know that we're doing that. I'm doing that personally. We're doing it as a staff. So I think it's a great opportunity to do that, because what it means is when we get on the field, our training environments are going to be better for our players, and that's our ultimate goal. For parents, I think this is a really interesting time overall. I would say it's a good time to investigate what is the best fit for your player. And whether that's the club you are right now or whether that's a new club, I think there's a lot of value in going to see what clubs are doing and how they're changing. And I think it gives the parents a little bit of opportunity, because we know the rhythm of a normal sport parent is very, very aggressive, driving here, driving there, hotels, food, et cetera. So it gives a little bit of time to investigate what is the best fit for my player. One of the realities that I tell parents is very little of these players are going to end up playing senior level, high level soccer or whatever your sport is. So really focus on the experiences of their youth level being positive experiences that when they're older, come positive affiliations with the sport and the people. We learned this with one of your daughters, and I think it changed. It's one of the anecdotal experiences that I had that changed my mentality a little bit, which is don't focus so much on the outcome, focus on the actual experiences while you're going through development. And then if that's done right, yeah, we might have very elite athletes come out, but that's not really our goal. Our goal is human development and really positive people that enjoy their soccer overall.
I'm glad you said that. Yeah, it's very, very key that the journey is just as important as wherever it ends up.
Yeah, one of the things I think this is kind of just a curiosity that I have with everything going on. I know it's been addressed at some of the higher level or by the higher level athletes in sport, but what do you think about the prospect, especially with like your, your pro soccer clubs, of playing games but having no fans there to cheer you on? I mean, I think that would be an interesting experiment in how some of these different athletes tick, like you've addressed, today and when we talked before, on the individual basis. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's something so unique, talking with athletes and seeing what clubs are going to do. I think where we're headed is it's going to happen. I think the Bundesliga is about to show us, the German professional league, that they're going to try to go without fans. I think you lose a lot of what makes soccer so special, which is the context of what we play in, how it feels to play in front of all those people. But I think at the pro level, it's totally different motivation, because these players are getting paid. They must support their families, so they must do what is told. And I think it's important to understand that, because they're required to do whatever is asked of them in terms of their professional employer. When you go to the youth levels, though, I think it's different, because I think there is some value in playing in front of other people, but I think a lot of the value of youth sport is what is actually happening in your daily training environment and then in the games. It's not as connected with what the fans are doing. So I think in youth sport, we can move forward once, some of the restrictions are raised and play maybe in front of less people and still have a lot of the benefits of youth sport, which is a lot of the experiences and interactions we have with the people we see every day.
Yeah, I mean, I was fascinated when somebody initially, like LeBron James, was saying, he's like, I won't play, you know, to an empty Coliseum. You know, I can't imagine doing it. And so I'm, you know, like you said, I mean, there's a big separation between, you know, amateur, youth, and professional, but I'd be fascinated to see, you know, even at the professional level, I bet some of them would almost do better and some would be like a shell of themselves that just feed off of that energy. So I think it's an interesting experiment just to see how much, you know, even at that highest level, you know, they can play at the highest level, but there's such a huge mental aspect, you know, in certain sports as well with the fan interaction, especially with basketball, in sports where the fans are almost on top of you. You know, it's different in other sports where, like, you know, American football and things where everybody's so much farther away and there's more people on the field. But, you know, I think with, you know, individual sports, you know, especially like tennis or even basketball, or, you know, there's only five people, you know, 5-on-5, it'd be kind of crazy to just to see it as a weird human experiment. So thanks for, you know, addressing that.
What is true is, I think, and you hit on this, where we're going in terms of the sport world is going to be dramatically changed by this experience. The fans, the way they interact with players. For example, like at Corpus Christi FC, it was a big initiative of us after we finished our games that we would always go to the fans after, take pictures, you know, hug people. It's going to change the overall environment of what's been happening in sports. So I'm curious how that is going to look, but it's reality. It's going to change the way we do youth tournaments where you have thousands and thousands of people on fields at a time. It's going to change the way we organize and handle youth training, pro training. You can't just switch a bib and give it to another player. So we're going to have a lot of restrictions, but I think a lot of the change will be positive, and it will make us examine maybe areas that we wouldn't have focused on without this happening.
I hope the science catches up with this, but I'm gonna throw something out from a medical perspective that I think medically makes sense. Again, I've been a physician 20 years. I'm not an infectious disease expert, but one of the things that I'm seeing is that the particular situation we're in right now, although it could start to, like you said, it's going to change the world to some extent, how everything works, but specifically to COVID-19, this virus tends to affect advanced age, 80 plus years old, and it also tends to affect people with pre-existing medical problems. I think what we're going to see as things relax is one of the things that's going to happen is young, otherwise healthy people are probably going to be given a lot more latitude to meet in groups, train, you know, team sport, you know, things like that. I think some of those things are going to come back online, and there's going to be some type of recommendations given that the highest risk people, once we get more and more data, we're going to start to see that the highest risk people are the ones that are going to have prolonged times of quarantine, or they're going to want to avoid certain scenarios. You might see situations where even though there might be a crowd that gathers for something, there may be some sort of checkpoint, you know, where they make sure people don't have fevers, or, you know, these types of things at the turnstiles, or, you know, these kind of things. I mean, there's all kinds of things that they could go that I've seen and done in other countries already, such as in the Southeast Asia, things like that. So there's a lot of possibility for what they're going to do. But my take is, medically speaking, it's probably the first step to getting kids back on the field or getting sport going again in the world and all kinds of other things is going to be this concept of understanding that the science seems to point, in my opinion, this is one doctor's opinion, it seems to point that there is a specific group of people that are most susceptible to this. Those people should be protected, those should be cautious, and should be most likely to be quarantined routinely or sort of socially distance themselves. But there's not a lot of evidence, in my opinion, right now that the vast majority of a healthy population should be, you know, locked indoors and away from each other and not doing things as a community. So I hope that the science that I'm starting to see and the testing I'm starting to see, I'm hoping that that plays out and that we see some sort of relaxation and that people can get on with their lives and we can still protect those people and try to be smart about that in the future. So that's my little medical two cents on what I see happening and what my experience has been practicing day to day during this COVID-19 situation. But I guess we're close to an hour in, Sebastian. Why don't we start wrapping up? Tell me maybe any final thoughts you have on this whole topic we've been hitting on, the, you know, what youth athletes can do during a COVID-19 lockdown. What kind of final thoughts to sum all that up?
Yeah, so I'll add a couple things that come from our conversation. But one is that if you have brothers or sisters, or if you have family and you play a sport like soccer and you are quarantined together, you probably are going to get the biggest gains if you compete against each other and try to provide some of the complexities that exist in the actual game. So the people that are probably quarantined in larger family units have a big advantage. I attribute most of my development as a soccer player to the fact that me, my dad, and my brother, and sometimes my cousin would relentlessly go at each other in the backyard for hours at a time. And you can see it in my game. You can see it in the way that I think about the game. But that, I always tell people when they ask me where I develop most of my thinking and skills and the way I play was in the backyard doing those things. So families that are stuck together, you have a big advantage, and I would say use it. For the people that don't have that, I would say you should look at yourself a little bit more holistically as an athlete, as in a person. What are the areas where I can maybe have bigger gains without doing this ball mastery, skill, technique development? There's a lot of areas that I can improve. Goal setting is a big one that comes to mind. Planning where you want to improve and how you're going to improve once you come out. And I forgot to mention this earlier, but one of the big issues that we have with all the content that comes out and where the value of a coach comes in is the idea of feedback. Without feedback, so if you're running a Zoom meeting, even with 20, 25 players, the idea, the opportunity that a player can get individual feedback is low. When you eliminate that feedback, the learning cycle is extremely impacted, and not going to be as you're not going to have as big as gains as we're talking about. So they're not having that feedback, not having that specific individual feedback is negatively impactful. So I want people to understand it. I'm not saying that there isn't value in the things that you're doing, but there is the possibility that there is more value and more gains to be had in doing different things. So a big message I would have for both coaches, players, and parents is don't feel so pressured from all this content. Do what works for you and where you need to get better. It might not be what the club is putting out for everybody. It might not be the talks that they're having. You really need to examine what you need to improve and what you want to improve and really what is realistic for you to improve. And for a lot of people, like we said, that might just be rest. That might be time with the family. So it's an individual thing, and I think it needs to be attacked individually. And one of the problems we have is it's easier to put out general content, and that's a problem when we're in quarantine or not. But that content does not target individual needs. And if you're really doing it right, if you want to be as impactful as you can, it's all about individual needs and how you target them.
Yeah, I just want to say thanks, Sebastian, because I'm always fascinated as much the mental aspects that you cover as the physical aspects. So appreciate, you know, all your insight as we're all, you know, juggling, you know, what to do both as athletes and just as people during this this weird time. So thanks.
Absolutely. Practical, insightful, as always, solid information for really athletes of all ages. I know we use soccer as the context. But the reality is anyone that hears this that has a youth athlete or is trying to get better themselves, this would have been valuable for it. And once again, I mean, I have to listen to this one again just to get all the little nuances to it. So, Sebastian, we thank you again for being on the WFO Live podcast. If you enjoyed this show, please make sure to leave a comment. Touch base with the Future Focus Health Network. We'll leave a link in the show notes and become part of our community where we can share and talk. Maybe I'll get Sebastian on there and you guys can ask him questions down the road. So thanks again, Sebastian.
Thank you, guys.